And speaking about opening a book, this brings me to the folly, to the next part of our muddy theories, because this theory is muddy in a different sense. DNA wasn't destroyed by mud flood, but the DNA, quote-unquote, experts are trying to destroy our white race through a mud flood. That's what they're doing. This is all politics. The folly of building a national socialist or nationalist worldview based on DNA science, which denies the existence of race. Actually, it's controlled by people that deny the existence of race. And I recently, just Tuesday, I think, I recently did a podcast with Eric Orwall of the Return to the Land Project. And this podcast was inspired because Orwall, back a few months ago, I saw a post that he made on X, Twitter, X. I should call it just X, but I don't know if everybody here would recognize that. Okay, X, the Elon Musk version of Twitter. Okay, I did a podcast with Eric Orwall Tuesday, but back a few months ago, I saw that he had, like, I guess he heard about this Christian identity thing, and he had asked for a list of notable personalities or people in Christian identity. I know that some of my friends on X had given him my name, but he went and interviewed a whole bunch of others, right? He didn't talk to me for some reason, even though he's on my followers list and I'm on his. Okay. So the concept of my speaking to him came up when people had approached him after he did a podcast with a former Q-tard internet grifter that I won't even give the respect of naming here. He's a race mixer and a former male prostitute. He's admitted these things, and a general piece of shit that won't repent, so he's not worthy of mention. Okay, you'll have to guess at that one. I'm sorry. So people had confronted him about me, and he said, well, he could talk to me. He could come on my podcast anytime and talk to me, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of laid down some of my principles, because when you go on these X spaces or these YouTube streams, you never know what you're going to run into. And I told him, I don't do debates. I'd rather do a friendly discussion. I don't like to debate. Debates never get anywhere. They never convince anyone. And they're futile, and crafty language can look like it wins an issue in a debate when it's just based on lies. Debates aren't about telling the truth. That they're about using rhetoric and telling lies to win a point. That's what debates are really about. I don't engage in them. And another reason why I don't engage in debates is that I don't give a fuck about opposing viewpoints. I don't care about them. I generally don't want to hear them. They mean nothing to me. If somebody wants to know what I believe, then I'm gladly willing to come on and explain that. But I also told him that I don't talk to non-whites like Handsome Truth. I would never talk to that piece of shit. I don't talk to sodomites like Handsome Truth. So I don't give these people any audience because they don't deserve any respect, period. And I might use some really bad language about them, but it's merited. They need that really bad language. The hell with these people. They're not even people, in my opinion. So I kind of said that in a probably a nicer way in an X post. And he saw that, and he told me that we could just have a discussion one-on-one, which I'm all for, okay? So I don't mind open forums as long as they're all white and they're all straight and sin-free, because I don't want to approve of sinners like race mixers. like the former male prostitute I just mentioned. And that's actually true, by the way, by his own mouth. So I'm not slandering anybody. I'm only repeating facts. So I don't talk to these people. So he got that, and we went on, and we had a decent conversation. But he immediately raised this DNA issue, and I wasn't really prepared for it. And I was dismissive about it because I don't even believe it belongs in a discussion. So here I'm going to explain why. And this is a problem with many secular white nationalists who have rejected God or even the concept of a God almost entirely. And doing so, they embrace secular humanism and they seek to explain the world through science. But as I had sought to explain in great detail in a 2016 series of podcasts titled The Jews in Medieval Europe, it's like 11 podcasts. What we know as science was heavily influenced by Jews from the beginning, as practically all of Europe's academic science researchers of that time, I'm talking about the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries, chiefly the alchemists, had been enamored with the Jewish Kabbalah. Then, in the time of Elizabeth I, the English queen, John Dee became acquainted with the Kabbalah while visiting a certain German alchemist. And he presented the Kabbalah at the court of Elizabeth I. And he eventually, the result, about 50 years after Elizabeth had died, was the admission of those who had been called speculative masons to the stonemasons' lodges of England and Scotland, an event which gave birth to Freemasonry. Those speculative masons were Kabbalists. They were out primarily, not all of them probably, but primarily they were alchemists and Kabbalists. From the 17th century, the Royal Society in England and the corresponding French Academy of Science, both organizations having been founded in that same century, had many members who also belonged to Freemasons' lodges. So right from the beginning, there was no science in Europe that was not infected by Jewish thought and the Kabbalah. So about a year later, in October of 2017, in my Protocols of Satan series of podcasts, which discusses, because someday I hope to be able to get back to it, the truth of the so-called Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. I'd rather call them Protocols of Satan. I presented a segment titled The Appointed Priesthood, where I had asserted that scientists were the high priests of the relatively new global religion, which is science itself. And if you don't believe me, go out into the world and watch how people regulate their lives through science. I would rather regulate my life according to God. So I don't do science, right? It's a totally different attitude. Today, the faith which average people have in climate change or global warming, in laboratory food, in vaccines, COVID claims, and DNA tests is evidence which all helps serve to prove that my assertion is correct. People do not understand that international corporations have evolved to rule over kings and nations, and that a great percentage of university research is funded by those corporations. The outcomes which the corporations expect are the same as those which they anticipate, because corporations have their own political objectives, and their money will be used to attain those objectives. Science isn't straight. If science was true, if science was dependable, there would have never been a COVID vaccine 5 years ago. Maybe it was six, I forget. And you would never hear of this red herring called global warming, which is only used to tax people and advance us into world government and world socialism, world communism. The corporate media that obediently parrots the so-called truths of those objectives, and the general population believes everything which it hears on television. This is the religion in the modern world. Scientists or its high priests. A simple Google search with results drawn from the National Science Foundation and the Association of American Universities reveals that for fundamental science research, the federal government funds just over 40% of this activity in universities, while business funds about 35%. And the balance is funded by the universities themselves or by non-governmental organizations, which also all have their own political agendas. But only about 18% of research termed research and development is funded by the federal government, while corporations fund 75%, and the balance of about 7% is funded either by the universities or non-governmental organizations. Typically, the corporations funding university research have agreements with the university which assure the corporation that it will own the intellectual rights to any discoveries produced by the research so that they may profit from their investments. So that's the quid pro quo. We can rest assured that corporations are not going to want results which alienate large sectors of their prospective consumers. And likewise, governments would prefer results which conform to government policy and not cause divisions or unrest among their populations. Anyone who does not understand, especially today, especially with the global warming hoax and the COVID hoax, anyone who does not understand how science can be politicized so that the interested parties can attain particular objectives is just plain gullible and a lot dumber than the most ancient Egyptian pharaohs or Mesopotamian kings. The rulers of nations have always understood that they cannot control the people unless they control what the people believe. As soon as the ancient kingdom of Israel divided, Jeroboam I, king of Israel, set up golden calves and mandated Baal worship for his subjects so that their religion would not hold them in allegiance to the kingdom of Judah, centered at the temple in Jerusalem. For that same reason, Jeroboam did that because he knew he couldn't control his people if they were beholden to the temple in Jerusalem, which was under the control of the king of Judah. So he cut them off from it and made them worship Baal and golden calves and set up a new priesthood of Baal priests. It's right in scripture. I don't remember the chapter and verse. Somewhere in the beginning of Second Chronicles or the middle of the book of First Kings. It's in there. Okay. In ancient kingdoms, the priesthoods and the scribes of the national or tribal pantheon of gods were always the second most honored class of citizens, sitting behind only the kings themselves. In this environment, those who rule over the people become the arbiters of truth and even choose what the people shall esteem to be true. They were told. There was no democracy. They weren't allowed to read many books and make their own minds up about what's true. They were told what to believe. Most people are so damn dumb, they have to be told what to believe. Okay, maybe I'm being too harsh, but I'm being real. So once again today, if you cannot see through the lies of the climate change agenda or the COVID vaccination drive, then you are completely blind. And on account of that blindness, absolutely stupid. You are. I don't care. I'm telling you the truth. Same thing if you believe in this DNA science, which is manipulated and where the truth is oppressed. If you believe in it, you're absolutely stupid because it's Jude, and it was Jude from the beginning. So turning to the matter at hand, which is so-called DNA evidence of race asserted by white nationalists. The arbiters of truth for this god are the high priests of DNA science, who themselves insist that DNA cannot be used to determine race. Go read the DNA literature. This insistence is found at every level of DNA science. It is policed by the science community, or by those who finance the science community. And it reaches to the first line researchers, to those who actually discover and catalog the genes and genetic expressions in the DNA itself. At the Office for Science and Society at McGill University, and that's in Montreal, there is an article titled, "Are You There, Race? It's Me, DNA." They're being funny, in which we read the following. Some people claim race is a biological reality, whereas others say it's a social construct. Looking at DNA, we could help resolve this friction. Then a little further on in the article, it says, in fact, any two unrelated human beings on the planet are 99.9% identical in their DNA sequence. Only 0.1% varies. That's a tenth of a percent. And here's the most important takeaway message from all this. It also happens to be the most replicated finding in the scientific literature on human variation. Of this 0.1% that varies, almost all of it, 95.7% to be exact, is found between individuals within the same race. Despite what our eyes perceive, there is more genetic diversity within a race than between races. And I must remark here that this statement is a blatant lie. If there's a tenth of a percent difference between races, and most of that tenth of a percent is common within a race, which is what they're stating, then the difference between races is greater than those within a race. And the authors are gaslighting their readers. There is also the general opinion of the scientific community that humans and chimpanzees have 98.6% of their DNA in common. So on that scale, a tenth of a percent is a significant difference between races of quote-unquote humans. Continuing with the article. If you didn't know that, don't worry. You were in good company. 3 out of 4 college students taking an introductory course in biology and genetics also do not know this. And since skull sizes are being discussed again in certain corners of the internet, In other words, they watch us. 90% of the variability in their volume also occurs within and not between human groups. And of course, there are significant differences between males and females. This is a big snag. This is their words. One more paragraph. This is a big snag in the argument that race is a biological reality. This finding, that there's more diversity within than between groups, is true for most physical traits, with one prominent exception, skin color. I would protest that, because eye color only varies widely among whites, but not among the other races. So they're not being fair, of course, because they're being political. Why, they ask? Because skin color is under tremendous selective pressure. It varies depending on how far from the equator we are, because a darker skin offers better protection against sunburn, skin cancer, and related damages. People with naturally darker skin were better adapted to their environment and were more likely to reproduce. The fact that a Maasai and an Aboriginal Australian both have very dark skin is not because they are part of the same biological race, but because both have lived under a very harsh sun for generations. So skin color is not evidence of race being a biological reality. And that's also a false argument. It's actually funny, since whites living in Australia or in South Africa for many generations are still white, and they will remain so. Furthermore, Negroes living in Canada or anywhere in the North for hundreds of years are still black. And there have been Negroes in the northern United States, in New England, for example, who are still as black as they were when their ancestors moved to New England. In my opinion, this McGill University article reflects a general consensus amongst the academic community and those who finance them. And there are many articles on the internet which reflect these same assertions, that DNA cannot be used to determine race. Excuse me. It is true that DNA can be used to determine proximity to certain ethnic groups, which suggests a relationship. But that is not the same as a determinant of race, or especially of mixed race, even if mixture is sometimes evident in individuals. For example, there are some Italians, Spaniards, Greeks, Portuguese, etc., mixed with Arabs in history. There are some Nordics mixed with Mongols, which is even found in the Nordic sagas. There are some Eastern Europeans mixed with Turks. Your DNA test might show proximity to one or more of these ethnic groups, but that is no guarantee that you are white, because you might be from one of the mixed portions of these groups. This mixing in the past actually skews the possibility of determining what is white in DNA, because there are very few samples of ancient white DNA with which to compare. And there is no real guarantee as to whether someone dug out of the ground who died 2,000 years ago was actually white. From an article at science.org titled "Race, Ethnicity Don't Match Genetic Ancestry," according to a large U.S. study, we read in part, Geneticists have long established that race and ethnicity are sociocultural constructs and not good proxies to describe genetic differences in disease risks and traits among groups. Some geneticists have pushed to use ancestry. This is a problem among geneticists, and it's going to persist because it's simply not true. Okay. Some geneticists have pushed to use ancestry, genetic differences resulting from the part of the world a person's ancestors came from, to explain those differences. Still, researchers have not settled on the best categories to use in genetic studies, or even whether categories are needed at all, and how to best use self-reported race and ethnicity. A lot of people have impressions of themselves, not realizing that their distant ancestors may have been mixed with those Arabs that invaded Spain or southern Italy or some other place like that. They have an impression of themselves as Italian. And that's the historical impression that's been passed down through their family. So they believe they're European and white. They might be some small percentage of Arab, which skews the entire understanding of DNA in people from a racial perspective, because the genetic scientists don't even realize this. Okay. A little further on in the same article from science.org, it's just a couple more lines. Geneticists have now mostly stopped using the term race as a label in studies, although the authors of a new paper say self-reported race or ethnicity might still capture important social and environmental factors that influence health, such as systemic discrimination. Note that they didn't mention actual diseases like Tay-Sachs disease or sickle cell anemia. They mention discrimination. What the fuck? Can you see how politicized this is? This is science.org. It gets more politicized as I proceed with a couple of examples from the National Institute of Health. But let me finish this. Genetics and environmental exposures can also vary considerably among individuals that may self-identify as belonging to the same racial or ethnic category, Rotimi wrote. Wow. So it's all about discrimination. It's not about susceptibility to actual diseases or the possession of certain traits that are rather consistent among certain races. That's why we have this chimp-out syndrome that is found in blacks from many generations. Okay. In my opinion, these articles are full of holes. It is not difficult to tell the difference between an African Negro and a white man with a deep tan because he lives in an area where the sun is a significant environmental factor. His head shape, his nose shape, and other obvious physical differences between whites and Negroes are not going to change. At the website for the National Institute of Health, which is one of the federal agencies through which research money is distributed to universities, that basic research money for the most part, and DNA is considered basic research, we read the following article titled Race and Genetics versus Race, and they put little quote marks around it there, in genetics. So first I'm going to read the lay summary. That's the summary for dummies, according to them, like people can't understand the abstract. That's kind of a new thing I've seen in these scientific studies as they're produced on the internet is this lay summary. So the lay summary says, a review of the medical literature since the completion of the Human Genome Project in 2003 revealed that race, a social construct created to justify slavery, continues to be used as a genetic category due to a lack of understanding of the continuous nature of human genetic variation. They love to talk about this continuous nature of human genetic variation because they are all evolutionary biologists. They take it for granted that evolution is true, and they refuse to realize the consistency in genetics in populations where the races are not mixed. They just don't even want to consider things from that racial point of view. They want to destroy the concept of race in our minds so that they could destroy it in the real world. And that's how all DNA studies today are being used. So you're not going to tell me what is white from a DNA study. You're just a clown if you think that's true. And that proves to me that you haven't done any actual reading in the subject. Race was a social construct created to justify slavery. That is laughable, but I will address that shortly. Okay, it's all about politics. We should all see that already. So now for the abstract. This is the real summary of what the study's about. Social scientists have long understood race to be a social category invented to justify slavery. So they tell college students that too, and PhDs, they tell them the same thing. And evolutionary biologists know the socially constructed racial categories do not align with our biological understanding of genetic variation. That's incredible. Two blacks are just going to spit out a blonde, blue-eyed Swede someday. And it happens all the time, don't you know? Okay. The completion of the Human Genome Project in 2003 confirmed humans are 99.9% identical at the DNA level, and there is no genetic basis for race. This is what the scientists are saying. So how could some white nationalist living in his mother's basement say that there is? I'm sorry. He better develop one hell of a thesis if he's going to overcome this. A systematic review of the PubMed medical literature published since 2003 was conducted to assess the use of African ancestry. Notice how it always turns to black slavery discrimination, Africans. To denote study populations in genetic studies categorized as clinical trials, to examine the stated rationale for its use, and to assess the use of evolutionary principles to explain human genetic diversity. So they want to use evolution to explain race, and it gets worse than that because they espouse the entire out-of-Africa theory. Notice that the discussion of race and genetics turned into a conversation focused on Negroes. But I have already spoken about the politicization of science, and 10 years ago or longer, and that was evident here in phrases such as the one expressing the claim that the concept of race was invented to justify slavery. The ancient Greeks and Hebrews had words which may mean race, which definitely referred to genealogy and origin, and which are often translated as race. And they had those words, long before any black slave had ever appeared outside of Africa. The very words gene and genetics actually come from a Greek word which means race, something which is astoundingly ironic. They better go change the names of gene, genetics, genealogy. They better change the names of all those things. Then for the part which helps serve to reveal that DNA science is being policed, we shall read the balance of the abstract. Excuse me. We searched for papers that include the terms African, African-American, or Black in studies of behavior, and they come up with results of 20 papers, physiological responses, and pharmacokinetics of drugs, pharmacokinetics, how your body responds to pharmaceuticals, how they work within your body, the pharmacokinetics of drugs and or disease associations, 62 papers, and as genetic category in studies, including the examination of genotypes associated with life, stress, pain, stuttering, and drug clearance, 126 papers. Of these, we identified 74 studies in which self-reported race alone, or in combination with admixture mapping, was used to define the study population. However, none of these studies provided a genetic explanation for the use of the self-identified race as a genetic category, and only 7 proffered evolutionary explanations of their data. In other words, they're saying all these studies, these 74 studies, fall short because they use self-identified race in their study and don't prove that self-identified race with actual genetic data from the subject of the study. So if a black guy says to a scientist, I'm an African American, I have black African ancestry, that's his self-identified race, but he might be lying. He might really be Irish or Russian or German or something. Okay, that's how absurd this politicization of DNA study has become, of DNA science has become. They go on and they say, the concept of continuous genetic variation was not clearly articulated in any of these papers, presumably due to the paucity of evolutionary science in the college and medical school curricula. You can bet your ass that when NIH, the National Institute of Health, gives out its funding for the year following this study, that none of these scientists got any money unless they changed their tune and walk in line. The balance of the paper discourages the use of self-identified race in association with genetic categories and uses the view of evolutionary biology and the so-called out-of-Africa theory accepted as fact to refute the practice. The powers that be will not accept race as a category which can be determined by genetics, even if it could be determined by genetics. So even if race could be determined by genetics, the possibility will not be funded, so that it will not be properly researched. Papers will never be published or even written, and we shall never know the truth, since the capability of doing the research for ourselves is beyond us. After all, racists are only poor rednecks who still live in their mother's basements. So how could they afford things such as electron microscopes and fancy centrifuges? And on top of all that, the NIH clearly wants all of us to believe that we are only a lighter variant shade of nigger. This article was written in 2021 and clearly displays the truths of our assertions concerning the use of science and how it agrees with the agendas of multinational corporations, world government, Jewish communism, and the objectives of the Protocols of Zion. So our theme tonight, Muddy Theories, is just as appropriate for what has become of DNA research as it is for the alleged mud floods, which the conspiracy quacks claim had destroyed Tartaria. With this science mud flood, they want to destroy us all. However, we have a historical record dating back to as early as 2500 BC. And the Akkadian Empire of Mesopotamia. That's the time of Sargon the Magnificent. Sargon the Great, 2500 BC, thereabouts. And to corroborate that, we have an archaeological record of inscriptions and relics dug out of the ground, and by those we can create a fair account of our origins. We certainly did not come out of Africa, although some of us went into Africa and eventually fell into a trap. For example, the very black people of the Republic of Chad, niggers as black as any niggers. Chad is an African nation deep in the center of the continent, sub-Saharan portion of the continent. They have a very high frequency of Y-DNA haplogroup R1b. That's a paternal haplogroup passed down from a father to a son, which is most common in Western Europe and one particular area northwest of the Caspian Sea in Central Asia. In this manner, Chad is isolated among African nations, as all of the surrounding Africans have different Y-DNA haplogroups, mostly unique to Africa. So there are examples for which it is difficult to find evidence in recorded history, but such examples are literally outliers and are not typical. This example of how these blacks in Chad have this European R1b haplogroup, which was also found among early Arabs. So it's very possible that some male Arabs created that particular population by coupling with African women on a rather large scale. So that's possible, but we can't explain that in history. That's an outlier. So we would assert that DNA research cannot change volumes of recorded history. Archaeology corroborates recorded history with a high degree of frequency, only on occasion changing our understanding of some event or some minor perception of an event, but usually augmenting it instead. History combined with archaeology is a much more sound approach to developing a perception of who we are. The so-called science of DNA is for Jews and all those who are fooled by them. So when I recently discussed Christian identity with Arval, Eric Orwal, to me, the DNA arguments were a distraction. I may have handled them more sharply if I knew they were coming, but I did not expect any such thing, and I wanted to discuss Christian identity rather than get mired down in a debate over the veracity of DNA research. I could have raised most of these points then. I wrote this portion of this paper in about 2 hours this afternoon, so I'm sure I could have discussed it in very much the same way a couple of days ago. I just didn't want to talk about it at all. Or the whole program may have been about DNA. The original sources for DNA research all deny that race can be determined genetically. They all interpret DNA research, or DNA itself, I should say, through evolutionary science. And it is all bullshit, 100%. If a man is aware of the Jewish undermining of our whole society, he would know not to trust it. But I did not want to get caught up in arguing those things. As for history in the Bible, yes, I could have gotten into how the Bible, throughout the historical books and the books of the prophets, substantiate everything that I did say concerning ancient migrations. But time was getting short, so I chose to highlight a few of Paul's statements in his epistles instead. Of course, I could talk for hours on that subject alone and cite everything I say, and I've done that before. But I do not know if Orwell himself would have the required patience. I did not agree to do the podcast for his benefit alone, of course. So that may be heard here tomorrow evening at Christogenia. It's already on YouTube. It's been on YouTube since it was done on Tuesday. It was a live stream on YouTube. So y'all could listen there, or you could listen at Christogenia tomorrow night or anytime thereafter. I have copies of the video and the audio, and of course I will post them both. Thank you for listening. Praise Yahweh, the God of Israel, and good night.